So we will receive a timely notification that it's being recorded now. The meeting is being recorded now. So video, audio, chat transcripts, as usual, will be available in this NHUG wiki page. We have a shorter agenda today. I will briefly update you on ASD projects, the announcement that we have already made sometime a couple of weeks back. And then Mick will talk about upcoming long outages. And after that, I will request Dan to present his GPGPU work under PrimeUp project. We are trying to highlight the derecho preparedness activity in brief. So in future meetings, if any of you would be interested or like to present your work for your derecho preparedness, I appreciate getting back to us, or just bounce a mail or suggest an agenda. So with that, let me start on the ASD part. So ASD on derecho. As you know, when we deploy a new supercomputer, the first 3 months we dedicate to a very large scientific projects for very large, I mean, very large computing scientific projects. It's a kind of computing campaign. The idea is few of these projects will have access to pretty much the whole machine, during which you can get a lot of your science done in case your computing workflow or the computing scenario fits that kind of model. So we have already solicited these ESD projects for NCAR as well as in universities. So these are two independent tracks. So it will be 5 to 6 CPU only projects and 3 to 4 about GPU only projects. Just to remind you all, 80% of derecho will be CPU only, and 20% of the capacity is coming out of GPU. That's about 320 GPUs and 2488 CPU based nodes. So for CPU based projects, okay, there's a question for Jim Edwards, though. No mixed CPU GPU projects. In fact, we do encourage such projects. We are not anticipating that there will be a lot of such projects, but we do encourage mixed CPU GPU projects. If you have a mixed CPU GPU projects, either of these projects, if it satisfies this, either of this partition, that is, CPU only core hours exceeds 30 million or GPU only core hours exceeds 50K, you are pretty much in the competition. So major competition needs to be done by January, February time frame. We expect the competition will ramp down during March, but it has to be completed all by March 31st, because after that the system will be opened up for general user and general computation. By early February, we will have a check-in just to make sure all the projects that we have selected is already on track to complete by 31st of March. And we reserve the right to terminate any projects that are not up to speed or really slower, or we can see that they won't be able to make it. And we will have a backup or standby list. Other projects can get in or replace those projects that are not making sufficient projects by early February. We also expect all the data analysis to be completed and data to be moved by 31st of March 2023. That is, you will have little over a year all of this on this project. Specific in car, this is the brief height. On page, sort of letter of intent, or you what you would like to do, how you align with your project INCA strategic plan and all that, needs to be submitted through labs by July 26th, that is by 26th of this month. We expect 3 to 4 such requests will be coming from each lab, at most, I mean. And out of which there will be a short list of project, or we hope to be able to notify you by early August or so, so that you prepare your full ASD proposal. And that is due by September 10. Then early October, the final selection. And by that time, we hope that our test system will be ready for you to test and try or port your project. So we will give you access to the selected project team to get ready for the derecho by mid-October. So, and this is the link. Let me cut this the link into the chat in case the link has most of the information. Sorry about that. Okay, let me do that a little later and go through the presentation as I'm running out of time here. So, and here is the university part. University, it's everything is one shot. Full proposal due by September 3rd. It will be just like yet another CHAP proposal. You have to have a NSF-funded project. Even if it is not directly related to the NSF-funded project, it should be aligned with the NSF-funded project, and that's a requirement for university ASD. And just like NCAR project, you will have access to the test system by mid-October, or once your project is selected. So with that, let me hand over to Mick for making some outage related announcement. So Mick?
Yeah, thanks, Sid. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear me.
Okay.
I think I have stopped sharing. So yeah. Please go ahead.
I don't have any slides to share at this point. I just was going to give everybody a quick update, brief update and reminder that we are planning for a full outage, HPC systems outage, later this month. It will begin early Monday morning on July 26th, and the full outage will, most of the systems will be back up by early, sometime on Thursday, July 29th, and that includes all of CASPER, GLADE file systems, campaign storage, Jupyter Hub, HPSS, Stratus, Quasar, and Cheyenne's login nodes. Now, Cheyenne's compute nodes will remain down throughout the maintenance period, but are expected to be back up on the following Monday, August 2nd. There's a lot of work being done in here. There's a lot of work that's already started, as a matter of fact, on the power infrastructure at NWSC. But in preparation so that we can minimize the amount of time that the systems are down. And that's really all I really want. I think I have to say about this at this point. But I'll be glad to field any questions at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it doesn't sound like it. So I will add a couple of, let's see. Oh, sure, Cecile. So they will start on Monday, July 26th, early that morning, and the outage, the maintenance work will extend through August 2nd, the following Monday. But one more time, the Casper, Glade, Campaign Storage, Jupiter Hub, HPSS, Stratus, Quasar, and Cheyenne's login nodes are expected to be returned to service by that Thursday. So approximately 3 days. Now, there is a full announcement on this, a reminder announcement coming out in this morning's daily bulletin, and that will run through right up till the beginning of the outage, the Friday before. So if, and I will put a slide, add a slide to what Sid posts on the wiki for this as well. Let's see. Jeremy, you had a question. I didn't quite catch it.
Yeah, Jeremy just said, could you post those important start end dates here in the chat?
I'll post, Jeremy, that's a good point. I'll post these in the chat here as soon as I'm done talking, and so that they're captured this in here too. Any other questions or comments?
Hi, this is Anna. Is there anybody that we can talk to about the ASD University project proposals to get advice and exchange ideas?
Sid, Anna, I think that's more for you.
Are you asking about or seeking collaboration here, or you need more clarification or more help?
I think I would actually both.
Okay.
But I think it would be more, you know, the fact that I have somebody to work on a really large problem, but he may need some support because he doesn't have the experience.
Okay. So it's my bad. First of all, we encourage and seek such, solicit such assistance, but we are proposing that you get back to us. So Anna, since you already met this, what I will do, I will, after this meeting, we will start a conversation chain and direct you to the right folks for this kind of proposal. But this is also my open announcement to all of you. If any of you are interested or kind of thinking that you do have a large project, but how to get there, how to prepare your proposal or how to arrange your computation, please get back to us. We will assist you in at least try to assist humans. It's not that we have a whole lot of human resources to deal with that, but at least we will give it a shot.
Thank you.
Hello, hi. My name is Karthik, and I'm wondering if there's going to be a web link or a page where we can go through the proposal details online.
Oh yes, means it was there in the slide as well as I have posted in the chat. Means, can you find it out or shall I do it once again?
I should be able to fish it out.
Okay.
Thanks. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. So just to add to the conversation that's just started. So we can consult with you to find out whether the particular computational problem that I have is a good fit for Derecho. Will there be some consultant who can tell us?
Sure, please. We do encourage such consultation, and I thought about that to announce, but I just forgot. It's my yes, please.
No, sir. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate your advice. So I can just open a ticket, or should I just send you an email, or how does this work?
But I would appreciate if you can open a ticket. Means that way it things are tracked. Most likely, most of the conversation will happen outside the ticketing system, because this is not really a problem. But at least in order to track, or in order to assign a particular individual, it will be helpful to go through a ticketing system.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate it.
No problem. Any more questions on, or any more interest, any of you are interested in ASD, or you have any questions that we have not addressed, please feel free to raise it now, either through chat or
speaking. Sid, Craig had a good question about whether the NSC proposals will be coming out this fall, and if so, if they'll be for computing on Cheyenne or derecho. I'm not sure of the answer of that. And what I posted in the chat was that we'll ask Sizzle and NCAR management and get back to everybody about that.
Actually, in last NHUG, somebody asked this very same question, and Dave Hart gave means a very rough answer. Here is my answer, quoting Dave. So the coming fall NSC, the requirement will be that you will have to come, it will be only for Cheyenne, first of all. It won't be for derecho. So the Cheyenne NSC, and that needs to be completed by the, means usually we give you 1 year time, but by the time your fall NSC starts, the Cheyenne lifetime, at least the way we see it, is less likely to be the case that you will get full one year. So in the solicitation, we will make that clear that you have to arrange your computation for less than a year period. It will be 8 or 9 months or so. For derecho, I think the first NSC solicitation will be on April, not in fall, but I'm not too sure about this part. So I will get back to you. Okay, so Preet, go ahead.
Yep. Thank you, Zed. So I have a quick question about the deadlines for the test system. So I thought like derecho will be open by January 1st, but in the slides it's mentioned as mid-October. If it's mid-October for the test system, how many nodes will be there? Like, what's the configuration of those things?
Number of units. It's pretty small system, less than a rack, means certainly not 256. It's mostly for the portability porting, and you have to make sure that your problem fits there. It may not have enough GPU nodes either, but this is a good question.
Sid, I'll look that up and try and have an answer for everybody before the end of this meeting. Okay, and I'll post it in the chat.
Yeah, it will be nice. Thank you, Mick. Yes.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Super. Okay. It sounds like we do not have any more questions. So let me hand over to Dan for presenting his preparedness with Prima project with GPGPU. Dan, it's all yours. You are co-host. You should be able to share screen.
Yeah, I messaged you. I have to quit and reopen Zoom, I think, because of security settings, but just a moment and I'll try to get that working. So, let's see. There it goes. Okay. Okay, I'm back now, and I think I have the sharing enabled, and I should be able to start in just a moment. Let's see, share. And okay. So, you're seeing this first slide here, I'm going to enable presenter mode, and then, is that all good?
Yeah, it looks good.
Okay. So, yeah, so my name is Daniel Howard. I and Davide Davanto have been working together with Brett Sanders and Adam Luke for the past couple of months on the PRIMO model. It's a parallel raster inundation model partnered with the University of UC Irvine and Zeppelin Floods, a small offshoot out of their research group. This project is primarily using OpenACC in order to implement a GPU version of their model. We chose OpenACC because it's very accessible towards other developers, including Brett and Adam, who don't have experience with CUDA, but it turns out it was simple enough to work with that to get them up to speed. Additionally, we were also able to leverage a GPU hackathon during our work together. And so we have Dave Norton, Matt Stack, and Mahida Tatineni from NVIDIA and SDSC, who also contributed some work towards this particular project. So the PRIMO app itself is basically a explicit volume, finite volume scheme for advancing solutions in a flood and coastal inundation model. Particularly, we've been using testing models in the Houston and Miami areas, Houston Hurricane Harvey as a particular test case. This is a solution on a Cartesian grid. Initially, when we were starting the project and looking through the code, we suspected the V-mount solvers to be the most expensive part in terms of what's contributing to time being spent in the model. That's part of what we were looking at. But nonetheless, there's some new approaches that Brett Sanders had developed towards solving this particular problem using this dual grid approach and then having these piecewise linear interpolations across each data cell. So there's this upscaling process that happens within the raster grids. In his initial project developing the model, it was a CPU-based model working with single process multiple data design. There's a paper that was published in 2019 on that particular version. It's just CPU only MPI version of that model. It's all in Fortran, but our focus is basically to then convert this to at least starting off as a single GPU version using OpenACC. And then eventually as needs progress towards multi-GPU implementation with MPI-aware CUDA and OpenACC. And OpenACC essentially is CUDA. So it's just hidden from user programmer typically, so that MPI where CUDA can work effectively with OpenACC. Nonetheless, moving forward, I felt like it'd be useful within this group to talk about like how we approach this particular project. So in terms of working with OpenACC, the code itself involved an initial loading of the raster data. That section could not necessarily be accelerated on the GPU due to data movement limitations. So the parallel I/O part of the project that needs to be done is a separate goal from the OpenACC and GPU implementations. But nonetheless, our primary target for OpenACC was, basically encapsulating and running kernels within the time stepping loop of the code, and including, as I mentioned earlier, the Riemann flux solver routines. So our suggested approach when converting any model or code to a GPU version using OpenACC, typically you want to start, if you're familiar with OpenACC, basically you it's a directives-based approach. So you'll surround regions of code that can be parallelized and put on the GPU with these ACC parallel regions, pragmas. Pragmas in C++, and in Fortran you use this bang $ACC comment in order to tell the compiler that this is a parallel region. You kind of use kernels or parallel regions. So kernels are ones where the compiler is left to determine whether or not it can be effectively parallelized. And a parallel region is basically where you can have more control into how it's parallelized. Typically, parallel can be better, but you just have to be more careful in how you're setting that up. And speaking of that and being careful in how you're doing so, it's important as you are making these changes to verify correctness of the code as you move forward. A useful tool is the flag TA equals autocompare, which you can add at compile time. And that will basically make the model run on both the CPU and the GPU simultaneously and compare the output between the two whenever data is copied between the two devices. There's usually discrepancy between the values between the host and device, but usually that order of error is usually on the order of 10 and minus 16 or something like that. But if you get like larger differences, then obviously there's an issue that you would have to deal with. But that particular tool you can use, the autocompare tool, it was very helpful towards ensuring accuracy of the model. It's important to start with just the ACC kernel and parallel regions and use that then the TI autocompare like first before adding data regions. Since moving the data around and doing that manually is probably the more difficult aspect of using OpenACC. Whereas if you just use the ACC kernels in parallel, the data movement is handled for you automatically. But basically every time you encounter a data region, it's always copied in and copied out. And so that can cause the model to perform really poorly initially. But then once you then add the data regions in the third step, you can, in order to minimize data movement, that will again allow you to speed up the model to the point where you're hopefully getting to a performance base you're trying to achieve. But as I was saying, so to reiterate that the parallel regions themselves without any data regions, basically the compiler automatically creates data regions immediately surrounding those kernels or parallel regions. But then each time you encounter them, it copies in and out, and that makes it be very slow. So initially, it'll be slower when you start from step one. But if you don't do this process, it can be much harder to isolate bugs if you, say, do the kernels and data regions at the same time and trying to figure out if maybe a kernel is causing an issue or one of the data regions is causing an issue. So that's just an important point to make in terms of the workflow that you should be trying to work towards in terms of how to refactor code for GPUs using OpenACC. So in the Prima model, as I was discussing, we have these data regions and these and the compute regions, and so the GPU kernel regions. In this particular model, we have this main time loop that's then looping through over each time step. And what actually ended up working out really well for our case was to actually encapsulate that whole main time loop within a large data region, and basically moving all the data before we start the time loop onto the GPUs, and do that appropriately as necessary. So copy in or create if it's then being, there's different directives you can use that will be prudent to consider depending on the use cases necessary for each data you're putting on the GPU. And then within that time loop, you can then have the GPU kernels either say like within a functional call. And so for example, we have this like call Fluxus routine. The ACC parallel regions are actually inside that Fluxus routine, not shown, but you can separate the concerns of the program in terms of you have these routines elsewhere. You don't necessarily have to have them all within the same space. But it's important, at least with whenever you are working on the GPU, just to be mindful of the data environment you always you're in, where the data is located. So if you ever have to run CPU code within that time loop, if you look in the center of this this kind of pseudo code, if there's any CPU code there that say relies on data that was on a variable that was on the GPU, you have to copy it back to the host, the CPU. And then when you're done with it, copy it back to the device to let it keep working with it. So you have to be mindful of those sort of considerations, but you want to, if in any case, you want to minimize any of those data movements and try to keep as much of the computation on the GPU as possible. And basically encapsulating the whole compute region with this larger data region is very helpful in terms of minimizing any amount of data movements as the program encounters any parallel region within, say, for example, this flux routine or advanced subroutine being called. Beyond just the, the main point is the data region can be as big as you want. You don't necessarily have to keep the data regions around each of the kernels. So that can be useful just in terms of keeping your keeping the code readable. But it's also very useful the same to keep to just like make the data region as large as possible, so long as all the variables and data can actually fit within the memory on the GPU. If that becomes an issue, then you will need to take a different approach, et cetera. So, but beyond the design of the code itself, I thought the main emphasis I would like to take in this particular talk is about how to like use various tools to supplement your design workflow towards improving performance of your GPU kernels and computing. So two very useful tools that I recommend and like workflow patterns that NVIDIA recommends is the Insight Systems and that's Insight Compute tools. There's also Insight Graphics, but that's only useful if you're more often doing like a visualization workflow. Each of these profilers are useful towards assessing the performance of the model and help you then isolate where additional work would be needed in terms of improving the model. These particular tools are at least included on Casper and under the NVHPC compiler toolkit. When you load that module, you'll then be able to run beyond the compilers themselves, the NVIDIA compilers or PGX compilers. You can also then run the Insight Systems and Insight Compute command line interface modules in order to run these profiles on your programs. And they're pretty simple to run. All you have to do is prepend your program with these commands, NSYS for the case of Insight Systems and NCU for the case of Insight Compute. There are additional arguments that you add in order to specify how you want the profile to run. But a basic one for like Insight Systems, just NSYS profile in your program. You can always learn more about like specific ways you can, different options you can run alongside these commands using the manual pages for those commands, running man NSYS or man NCU, or see the NVIDIA's docs online. But some good options for NSYS include, specifying the output name. You can use like the PBS job name easily enough, and it'll just add a .qdrp. QDREP for their report file names, as well as specifying the kinds of traces you want to make. So you want to trace like OpenACC code versus just CUDA code versus maybe OpenCL code. You can specify that. If you want to track memory usage of your program, you can add CUDA memory usage. Status equals true will give output similar to if you've used NVIDIA Visual Profiler before. They'll also include a SQL file by default, or you can specify it to be a CSV file. Of all the statistics of the profile run, and then you can automate any data analysis on the profile results directly through those databases. So for example here, this is basically our initial profiling results when we did our first pass of converting it to an OpenACC GPU version. This is showing a screenshot from the Insight Systems GUI. So at least a nice thing with OpenACC, it'll automatically name kernels based off the subroutine and number line. So you can see like exactly where in the code and what in which subroutine some issues can be taking place. You can even further segment that profile by adding NVTX ranges. It's a particular module you can add or additional library you can link with like C++ code that then allows you to call certain functions to then surround regions of the code to then have the compiler demarcate where its time is being spent as it's taking samples throughout the code. So initially with our case, using our kernels surrounding like various routines, one of the routines we were using was this advanced routine that I mentioned earlier in our pseudocode. Basically, this advanced routine was like taking up so much of the time in each of the time steps that you basically couldn't see any of the other kernels being run. And so you can see from the output of the screenshot that, it's just taking up a large bar graph of like the time period. And like, if anything, you can't really even see the smaller kernels on the outside. So clearly there's an issue there. And if you want, you can even expand down to the advanced view of the lower part. And you can see that like the advanced routine itself within each time loop is taking like, half a second, while all the other kernels are, taking on the order of microseconds. So obviously there's an issue there that we needed to address. And so as we press forward, we actually we're trying to figure out how to fix that towards and towards our testing to fix that particular subroutine, we determined that it was the compiler treating one of the another subroutine within the advanced routine that was causing excessive data movement. To be very specific in how that works, within OpenACC, as if you want to like learn more about OpenACC program, if you're not familiar with it, there's one other directive you can use called ACC routine, which is allows you to specify a specific subroutine to be compiled to run on a on the GPU. And so then when, say, like when it's, say, called within a kernel, it knows to then run the GPU version of that subroutine's code. So in this particular case, it's in most cases, it's actually possible and usually sufficient to just use the ACC routine, specify if it's a sequential function or if it's parallelizable. It can be like a simple sequential function. But depending on how you're, say, passing arguments to that routine, you can maybe cause issues. So in our particular case, so we had like our advanced routine, and we had the VFR routine that was a sequential in its scope. But what we were doing, you know, we're passing variables to this routine, you know, x, y, and a slice of an array, a z, one to like a small range of an array. It was a small range, so like it wasn't useful to try to parallelize it even further. So we still wanted it to be sequential. But by doing this slicing, at least within Fortran, what it ended up doing is it ended up creating that copy of that array each time that method was called, rather than passing the address of that particular subset of the array. So then as it accounted that, it made it very, very slow. So actually what we ended up doing in order to fix that is we had to then basically inline that function manually within the code, and that actually ended up fixing the problem, and where we were able to avoid that issue with the how the compiler was treating and countering that particular VFR subroutine. These are type of issues you can encounter, and we ended up being able to fix it that way. And once we fixed it, we actually then run the profiler again, and we saw much more improved results. You know, we now had this much shorter duration of the advanced routine. It's actually now taking half a millisecond, you know, 514 microseconds, and that's on the comparable order of the other routines as well. And as an interesting note, we also initially, I didn't show this for this talk, but like we actually initially ran like an ArmForge model, ArmForge profile on that model for just the CPU version. And after we made this fix for this the advanced subroutine, we now got similar like proportion of time spent within each of the routines that we saw on the CPU, now on the GPU. So it showed that we're achieving similar compute throughput, at least on both devices, but now, you know, with the much greater compute intensity possible on the GPUs. So for in the case of our Hurricane Harvey test case for 100 second test run, we actually were able to achieve a 56x speedup of a 1v100 GPU versus one CPU. And so this speedup is isolated primarily for the compute intensive region of the code. The time stepping loop does not account for the data initialization and IO, where we had to read in all the data, which is still proving a bit of a slowdown now for model, but that's actually typical in most workflows. You know, once you speed up the compute issues, you'll be left with having to deal with IO. And so that's where we're focusing on now currently for our future efforts. But nonetheless, some of our, you know, preliminary results highlighting that, we see improvements so this is for like our upscale factor, basically increasing the size of the problem. We don't necessarily get that much improvement over time because of that IO issue we are encountering. Beyond the moving forward, we'll plan to continue to address IO issues as well as then work towards the multi-GPU implementation for this particular model. Before I move forward, having gone through at least the Insight Systems part of our of profiling, are there any questions at this point? Okay, I think I'll step forward, but feel free to interrupt me anytime. as before, from your call, we usually will start with Ensight Systems. And then if you want to go even deeper into performance optimization, you'll then the next step is to then use the Ensight Compute Profiler, which will allow you to analyze specific kernels within the code. So the Ensight Systems will focus on the overall code, but Ensight Compute will focus on just individual kernels within the code. So NCU will function the same way. You just prepend it to your model you're running, and you can set various options to that the same, just like you would NSYS. So in this case, you know, some useful options include like you can set the full scope of all metrics that NSYS Compute can measure. The dash F just means you overwrite the file you output. You can specify the name of the output file report. One of the most useful ones is you can also with the kernel regex option, you can then specify what name of the kernel you want the Ensight Compute to specifically be profiling. So in our case, we wanted to analyze advanced from earlier. So we just named the advanced 1509 GPU. That's like the name we saw from the Ensight Systems. And you can focus on that particular kernel. Otherwise, if you leave that out, the NCU Ensight Compute will just analyze every single kernel it encounters. But you can then limit, say, you know, maybe you skip a few to like the GPU warm up, or you can only like profile a certain number of like kernel launches. So in this case, we only wanted to profile just two launches. In this case, there's actually like two kernels happening. There's a reduction kernel happening within the method in the kernel itself. So you want to make sure you get each of those. But in any case, for this initial analysis that we saw with advanced, you can then, we basically have here in the screenshot a comparison between the inlined VFR version of the model and the function-based VFR version of the model. So the blue bars is the improved upon, and the yellow bars is the one with it. I think that might be backwards. The blue one is the one with it inlined, and the yellow one is the one with it set as a function. And so we can at least see that the memory bandwidth percentage has much increased with the improved model, which is one of the metrics we want to be improving upon. But you can still notice that the SM percent right there, that's the streaming multiprocessor occupancy rate. That is actually relatively low for both models. And that's just indicative that it's still a relatively small model for our test case that we've been running. And so we've actually run a few other additional test cases on even larger models. And you know, we're then seeing that, you know, the GPUs have much more ability to handle much larger problems than even we initially threw at it. So that was a good indication so far of additional work we could be doing. But as you can see, there's lots of data that comes out of Ensight Compute. It can be a little bit overwhelming in terms of what's important. And this is just like one the initial page you often see, and often highlighting some of the more important aspects to look at in terms of your profiling analysis. But you know, you can do a roofline analysis within the model. You know, checking to see like the intense arithmetic intensity you're able to achieve, given the theoretical intensity you should be able to achieve, and that's a useful metric to use as well. Here you have a compute workload analysis. You can see the type of operations that are emphasized throughout the model, depending on the implementation we have used. And so with the, as you can see for the floating point 64 kind of line, there's the, I ended up mislabeling them with the VFR inline and current, but the inlined being the blue bars and the yellow line being the functional version, which is just a function call. We see that like a significant amount of time is spent just moving data around with the ALUs, the algorithmic logic units, as well as some additional time seen in the load store units, the LSUs. And so you end up like losing a lot of time spent with actually doing floating point calculations, which is what you want to see that graph higher than most of the others. Ideally, even you want it to like take, so at this point, it's really only using 15% of the time spent in the model. So there's still some improvement that probably likely could be made. But in any case, it's moving towards that direction is some of the type of improvements that you can use the Insight Compute to investigate and then see where those improvements can be made. Additional parts of Insight Compute, you know, that there's memory workload analysis. You can see how data is being moved around within the GPU in its various caches in order to save, you know, if you're seeing issues here, you can then work on, say, trying to coalesce memory together, make it so the memory is in line with each other as it's moved around. There's within OpenACC, there's a cache directive to help to specify memory that's going to be used often and frequently within a kernel to keep it within a local cache that's more readily accessed regularly while the kernel is running. Those sort of optimizations, you can then see maybe an impact here being through the additional, more detailed analyses that Insight Compute offers. And admittedly, like as I said, there's lots of data you can go through Insight Compute. I'd recommend, I can't go to detail on everything. One important thing maybe to look out for are any of these warning sign symbols that can appear. They'll often give you like little recommendations of what to look at and what might be important. So there's even a section that can like highlight specific, you know, line numbers within your code where the profiler is seeing an issue, and that can help point you in the correct direction of where you might want to look at towards further optimization. But there's admittedly so much information there within the Insight Compute can offer that it's important maybe just like you focus on a few and just be on the lookout for some of the important ones initially so you don't get overwhelmed at first. Otherwise, if you want more information, you want to like keep going, diving down to performance optimization, there's plenty of documentation that NVIDIA offers as well as other resources towards how to interpret some of these results. One last thing I'll focus at least with Insight Compute. If you go to the page here, there's like at the top left, there's a source and there's a drop-down box. You can change that. Usually it's like details page is what you default we pulled up, but you can change it to source and you can actually jump around the code and see where time is spent within each line and actually then compare that to the assembly code. So if you want to go really deep, you can go that route, but that might not be of interest to anyone, but nonetheless, at least these metrics here can at least highlight where time is being spent. So you can like see where, perhaps if there's an opportunity there within specific function calls, how to then improve upon specific areas of the model. So as I said, lots of profiler data. What is important? So like to remind you is that occupancy is an important metric to look at. That's like the SM percent, as we saw earlier, the streaming multiprocessor. So that's the number of active threads versus the max number of threads per computing unit. So it's important to check whether the streaming multiprocessors are actually being kept busy or not. If low occupancy, you can try adjusting work group size versus game worker vector sizing across the kernels and how you specify that within OpenACC. Or if you're in CUDA, you can do the same thing. You have more direct control with CUDA, but OpenACC gives you some control just the same. Sometimes that occupancy can also be impacted by other things, such as, you know, with our initial case, we had a memory throughput issue as memory had to be moved around with the inline versus function-based VFR routine. But that came up with the issue efficiency, where we saw very little floating point operations being done. And so you can look at various different, all those different operations to see what's useful to you towards perhaps trying to improve. Issues there that can lead to like kernel stalls as like waits for data to move around. That can be and our issue was like a memory dependency. We were waiting for that sliced array to be created and moved onto the GPU, and that was taking up our time because we like execution dependencies, and you're waiting for different tasks to finish, synchronization issues, memory throttles. Perhaps, you know, bandwidth is not sufficient for the amount of data that needs to be moved, and other issues like that. And beyond that, like, you know, the last one is just the peak bandwidth percentage. That was the second bar below the SM percentage, the memory percent. So that's just checking to see how much of the achieved bandwidth you're actually achieving for the GPU. So as I mentioned earlier, you look for like coalescing memory loads, store values, and local cache memory. or reusing data. And that's like the main thing when you're often starting with OpenACC code is like, if you're still having issues in terms of moving data back and forth between host and device, if that is suboptimally implemented, you'll see this peak bandwidth percentage suffer just the same. And so this is like some final takeaways from learning about profiling with NVIDIA Insight Compute. It's important to refactor the GPU codes in incremental steps in order to avoid bugs. The auto-compare tool is a great resource in order to ensure that you're maintaining correctness of your code. It's important also then minimize data movement. So when we're initially talking about the surrounding the whole compute, the time stepping loop with the data region, basically by doing so, we're only moving data once, and then the second time when we exit the GPU loop, and then any small times for like maybe constants within the time stepping loop. So as much as possible, try to minimize data movement through judicious use of data regions as much as possible. Ensuring performant code by running when using profilers, it's important just go through that in steps. So it's important to first run NSYS to just get an overview of the model. You can maybe choose other profilers if you're comfortable with like RMAP or Tau or other profilers, but it's good to just have an overall idea of how your model was performing, and like see where you're needing to improve upon that using that initial overview from the output from those profilers. And then when you want to make even further optimization, you can then use Insight Compute. And using that can help you say check if like particular sections of the code is being implemented ineffectively by the compiler, like in our case I showed earlier with the call to that VFR function. Last few points, we end up making major progress being able to partner with the GPU hackathons events that are offered regularly throughout the year. And so I suggest, organizing and set aside specific time for your small or medium-sized team to focus on improving your models. And you can use those GPU hackathons to not only have that space to dedicate towards working on your model development, but also then being paired with other mentors and often people from experience at other HPC centers or from NVIDIA themselves to support your development just the same. And lastly, as an important thing to maybe mention, I'm focusing a lot on optimizing the code, making it perform better, but code optimization is less important than following good software engineering practices. It's always good to, make sure you're developing unit tests and documenting your procedures well and maintaining, recording your improvement over time succinctly and in a robust database so that you're able to refer back to any changes you made easily and able to then share your code and publish it in a manner that's accessible to others and not just the developers within your own team. Just some useful resources. I imagine these slides can be shared later, but there's some textbooks just specifically on GPU profiling. There's like a section in the Parallel High-Performance Computing text by Roby and Zamora. The Kirk and Wu text is a very useful resource. It's the same. If you want a specific webinar that goes specifically deeply into systems or compute separately, NCSA has a few that they published. Oak Ridge National Lab, they have a few slides as well, webinars they've done. You're also welcome to peruse like NVIDIA's blogs. They have some useful posts about how to go about inspecting kernels and using their tools like Insight Compute. And of course, there's always a developer documentation, which is just as equally important to reference as well. Can be pretty dense, but it has as all the information I think you would need towards further using these profilers to the best of their abilities. In any case, that about sums up from what all I have. Are there any questions from about the use of Insight systems to compute or other GPU porting with OpenACC? And I'm happy to take your questions at this time.
Please feel free to unmute yourself and ask question, or just write your question in the chat, whichever way you prefer.
I'm seeing some questions, or at least see some comments in the chat. See if I'll start with Ned. Is there any reasons to not use Fortran's do concurrent for automatic GPU acceleration by NV Fortran's dash STD par compilation flag? I don't think there's any reason not to use it or not. If anything, the standard implementations like that offer like portability across different systems, I think, more easily than say even OpenACC. OpenACC actually will support and has supported as of the past two major versions. So I can't say reason to use one or the other. I mean, I think they're both equally fine. Adoption currently of like the standard language like do concurrent or STD par is not yet prolific. So I can't say towards the future viability of those methods, but I mean, like they are part of the Fortran standard now. So that's a good approach to make. And I think it will be supported. So I don't think you have a issue to use it or not. You can either stay with just OpenACC or use the standard implementations of NV Fortran as they're being implemented with the most recent Fortran versions. See any other questions? I've not seen any others, but feel free to unmute yourself or ask away. But otherwise, Sid, will we be posting these slides somewhere for others to review if they'd like?
Yes. So all of these slides will be posted to NHUG Wiki site, NHUG Wiki. The talks will be recorded and recording links will be there. And yeah, certainly I echo Sina's comment, but it's a very nice and informative presentation for me. Thank you, Daniel. It's a good job.
Well, thank you, everyone. I think I'm going to pause share. And otherwise, I think we're at the top of the hour. So I'm not sure what your plans are the rest of the agenda, but I'll let you take it back, Sid.
Thank you, Daniel. Yeah, so since we are at the top of the hour and we exhausted our agenda items too, so let me end this call. And as I mentioned during beginning and end of all the past NHUG presentations too, the things will be recorded and available through NHUG Wiki. You will have options to make comment or propose future agenda as well. So have a nice day. Bye.